Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. With me now, Meghan McCain, Daily Beast columnist, MSNBC contributor, daughter of Senator John McCain, and Michael Ian Black, comedian, television star. He is the 40-ish married liberal. She the 20-something single conservative. They took a cross-country RV trip together to see if they could find political common ground and a few good parties along the way. The result is a book that they have titled America, You Sexy. And I'm not even going to say.
The Supreme Court just said you can say whatever you want, man.
They can. But I still have the right to use individual discretion and not use a word that is so denigrating to women as its only use that I'm not going to say it.
Everyone keeps saying it's denigrating to women, but I consider myself such a feminist. And I think, like, the gay community has taken over the word queer. I think as a woman, I have sort of taken ownership of that word.
Is that the spirit in
yes.
which you say it?
And I'm very, when people, Michael actually said, he was like, people may think you're a bee. And I said, bees get things done. I like being called that because it means I'm doing my job. And Madonna says, I'm strong, I'm independent, and I know exactly what I want. If that makes me a bee, so fine.
This is like
that's
how
I feel.
How young black guys use the N-word to each other just to say, hey, buddy.
It's meant, I mean, I take personal offense to anyone saying that I could possibly be anything but a feminist because I literally feel like every single day of my life I'm fighting against stereotypes for women, especially in politics, especially with conservative women. And the title of this book is meant to be campy and irreverent. And quite frankly, it's marketed towards young people and 20-somethings. And we wanted a title that would jump out because politics is so scary and can be intimidating to a lot of young people. And we wanted this to be something that wouldn't, you know, scare them.
So it's America, You Sexy, that word, a love letter.
B rhymes with witch.
To freedom. And now, Meghan, you're actually a New Yorker, right? You grew up in Arizona.
Yeah.
But went to college
yeah.
here at Columbia, graduated mm-hmm. in 2007, live in the city today.
Uh-huh. Go Lions, yeah.
And I gather you moved to L.A. You go to the sports team as your Columbia reference?
I know. Oh,
didn't they
no.
go 4 years without winning a football game?
Oh, it was so sad when I was in college. They didn't win, like, anything. And then the only thing, but I remember the chess team was very good.
Of course they were.
And the fencing team was very good. But I've got such Columbia University pride. I had the greatest time ever in college. I think everybody should go to Columbia University. It really made me who I am right now.
I don't
now.
Think everybody can get into Columbia University.
Well.
Where did you go, Michael?
NYU.
So,
that's right.
But I dropped out. I dropped out.
It's all uptown versus downtown.
I know.
Yes.
So this city voted like 80% against your dad. Is that a weird starting point for picking a place to live?
I mean, I've lived here before. He ran for president the second time. And, you know, I think I'm from Arizona and I've got a lot of Arizona pride, too. But I think New York City is the greatest city in the world. And I love living here. And I consider myself a New Yorker and an Arizonan at the same time.
And, Michael, you now live in Redding, Connecticut with
I
your
do.
Wife and two kids. You grew up in New Jersey. Where in New Jersey?
It's called Hillsborough, New Jersey. It's in Somerset County. I lived in New York City for 10 years. I lived in Peekskill, New York for about 2 years.
So now in Redding, I'll bet a lot of Republican hedge fund managers live on your block.
Well, one of the things about Redding is that it's just outside the financial sphere of influence enough that we don't have the hedge fund manager thing going on there.
So you're living the conservative lifestyle and she's living the liberal one?
That's exactly right. And we talk about that in the book.
And early on in this road trip, one of your forays into your search for common ground is that Meghan's brothers teach you how to shoot a gun. Why that particular bit of Southwest anthropology?
Well, because I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in the suburbs. There wasn't a lot of gunplay in Hillsborough, New Jersey. So I'd never fired a gun before. I went to summer camp when I was 9 or 10, and they had a rifle range, and I objected on conscientious grounds. I mean, I was that kind of kid. And
very crunchy.
I know. So,
Michael, we were talking about the camps we went to, and I was like, I did like hunting and archery and riflery, and I loved camp. And he was like, I went to theater camp.
So I'd never fired a gun. So Meghan's brother, who's a former Marine and a sniper school instructor, took me out to the desert and showed me how to shoot guns. Now, as a liberal, you know, it made me uncomfortable. I'd never fired a weapon. I loved it, Brian. I'm now a huge supporter of
what
the Second Amendment.
What was it about it? Did you do what was the thrill?
I think the thrill is...
man's man.
I guess so. I mean, for somebody like me who can't, like, you know, hammer a nail, to, like, fire a gun and see that little puff of, I was going to say the target explode, but I couldn't hit the target. I hit the dirt. To see that, it's pretty powerful stuff, and it's fun.
So now you're all dewy-eyed about the Second Amendment.
Oh, it's my favorite amendment now.
And Megan, seriously, you describe yourself as a gun-loving NRA supporter. What's at the heart of that? Is it love of hunting? Is it preparation to defend yourself against Eric Holder? What is it?
Eric Holder, when he storms my house in Arizona. You know, I grew up in Arizona, and Arizona is really the heart of gun culture. And it was not unusual for me to have friends, parents that would carry guns in their glove compartment in their cars when I was growing up. Everyone I knew... pretty much
for what? What were they going to do with the gun in the glove compartment?
For me, it's all about
shoot the deer before they crashed into it.
I mean, I think it's just self-defense and protection. As a woman, I feel very empowered being able to, you know, use a weapon. I don't like use a gun effectively, and I just feel like it's about defending ourselves if something could happen. And I respect the right to bear arms. I love target practice. I like to hunt.
You're so terrified of zombies?
I'm terrified of zombies. Yeah, Michael always jokes. I'm like, when the zombie apocalypse comes, he's running over to my house.
That I discovered...
Zombies can't be shot, though. You know that.
Oh, I thought you could shoot him in the head.
I think you could shoot him in the head.
Oh, maybe.
Brian, get your zombie lore straight.
I really have to bone up on the zombie thing.
The thing that I didn't understand, and maybe come to understand a little bit better about gun culture, is that it really, it's mostly about self-reliance more than anything else. It's about the idea of individuality and feeling like you can take care of yourself. That's what I took away from it.
There's a certain group of gun people who feel really strongly about them, who think they're the most patriotic Americans in the land, but they're also afraid that this democracy they love so much is going to, in fact, break down their doors and make them pledge allegiance to the United Nations. That's kind of a paradox, isn't it?
I don't really know. I mean, I think there is – Michael sort of shed light on me that maybe, at least where I come from and the people I know, there's maybe more paranoia about – and I didn't even really realize this because the zombie thing is – it's a joke, but there's part of me that I'm like, if something happens in this country, if there's a terrorist attack, like I'm going to be able to defend myself and I'm not going to go down without a fight. And Michael thinks that's paranoid and I think it's patriotic. And I think it's, you know, one of the main things this country was founded on. And, you know, I know I have come to understand how liberals find it so strange. But then once I inevitably introduce them – to gun culture,
they love it.
A lot of times they like it. I know, especially women. I definitely find women are very empowered if they choose to become a gun owner and choose to learn.
By the way, our producer staff is known for their in-depth journalistic research, so they have quickly produced the top 5 ways to kill a zombie, according to Google: a wood chipper, a pit of concrete, starve them, chainsaw, and shoot them in the head.
Okay, good.
A wood chipper.
Yeah.
How will I stick
Smith
and
Wesson is now making a wood chipper.
Well, thank you very much.
My guest, if you're just joining us, Meghan McCain, Daily Beast columnist, MSNBC contributor, daughter of Senator John McCain, and Michael Ian Black, comedian, television star. He, the liberal, she, the conservative, took an RV trip together to see if they could find political common ground. And they've wound up with this book called America, You Sexy, B-Word, A Love Letter to Freedom, and this book tour, which has landed them in our studio. Sort of related to the gun thing, Michael, you write about your epiphany that Republicans are afraid, differently from the way Democrats are afraid, but still as a group, afraid.
My sense – now, look, I'm probably painting with broad strokes, but my intuitive sense about Republicans and Republicanism is look, Democrats are afraid, I think, for the future. I think Republicans are afraid for the present. To my sense is that there's a lot of fear in the Republican mindset about what is currently occurring and how they can prevent the sort of apocalypse that they see coming every day of their lives. And so that means a constant sort of march against tyranny, a kind of constant constant watch against the forces of evil. And, you know, to me, that's paranoia. To Megan, maybe not.
I think it's being prepared. And that was one of the things we discussed in the book, was that I feel like it's being prepared and he thinks it's being paranoid. So
you start your trip in Arizona. You're from Arizona, very much in the news these days. The Supreme Court's going to rule on the state's immigration laws. What do you think of the immigration law, Megan, which requires police to screen everyone arrested for immigration status, allows them to ask anyone who they think might be here illegally, maybe on kind of shaky grounds for suspicion, profiling, say the critics. You have an opinion about that?
You're talking about SB 1070?
Yeah.
I was against it. I think it's un-American to pull someone over simply because they're Hispanic. One of my best friends in the entire world is she's Mexican, and she went to high school with me, went to law school, is now a lawyer. And just the idea that she would be pulled over because she's Mexican when she's giving so much to the community in Arizona was what made me come out against it. Listen, I think Arizona's getting a bad rap, though. I think we're really on the front lines when it comes to immigration, and it's really easy for people on the East Coast to sort of pontificate that we're racist and it's so crazy down there. And I think we're just the ones that are having to deal with it. You know, immigration is the most – is maybe other than healthcare, the most complex issue to discuss in any form, and it's incredibly difficult. And why people don't discuss it is because if you don't 100% support, you know, just legalizing all illegal immigrants in this country everywhere, the media automatically paints you as a racist. And that's a very scary thing to talk about publicly when, you know, you could possibly be labeled, you know, anti-Hispanic or racist or whatever. And I think, you know, what the president did with his immigration plan, although I do support most of it, I'm very disappointed that it was obviously done just simply for political gain and for this election. And he's worried about, you know, getting reelected. And this was it was, quite frankly, a brilliant move, but completely based off politics alone.
The timing is suspicious. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. And thinking about you as an Arizonan and a New Yorker, mm-hmm. attitudes about immigration have got to be one of the biggest differences between your two homes. Our huge immigrant population here in the city is seen, even by most white people, if I can put it that way, as a source of economic growth, constant renewal of the housing stock, pride in being a crossroads of diversity, and great food trucks. Why do you think it's so different in Arizona?
You know, Arizona's old school. It's an extremely conservative red state. And listen, I love Arizona. I really do. And I consider it my home. And I understand where people are coming from. But the problem is there was this famous incident that happened about a year and a half, 2 years ago when an illegal immigrant crossed the border. And allegedly, now I have to say allegedly because he was never caught, but for all intents and purposes, he shot a very well-known rancher on his ranch in the middle of the night. And it created this sort of firestorm that was the reason why SB 1070 was passed. And I just think that it's incredibly complicated. And for whatever reason, I run into people all the time that are very scared of the changing face of America. I mean, we have a black president, we have a Latino woman on the Supreme Court. The face of America is quite literally changing, and it's no longer an old white man. And for whatever reason, that scares a lot of people. And I think people are just innately scared of change.
So, Michael, judging from the book, you and Megan found common ground on gay marriage.
Sure.
Legalization of marijuana.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And your admiration for Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich. We sat down with him in D.C. He graciously agreed to meet with us when a lot of congresspeople wouldn't, and gave us 45 minutes of his time during the debt crisis last year, and allowed us to record everything, had no compunctions about us recording and being on the record, and was just this really passionate advocate for his beliefs. We said to him right away, said, "Are you a liberal?" And he goes, "I've been called that." And we had a big laugh about it. And I think I understand what he means now, because now that I'm talking about this book and I'm sort of self-describing as a liberal, the label doesn't mean that much. And that's what we're finding all across the country, is that these labels, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, are more or less media constructions that serve a narrative but don't necessarily reflect the way people actually live.
So did she influence your politics
Absolutely.
By the end of this?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Specifically, for example?
Second Amendment issues. She really made me look at health care. I didn't change my mind about the Affordable Care Act, but I mean, I had to think about it, and I had to think about why I believe in it.
Military.
The military. I was pro-military, as I think most people are these days. But she gave me a look at military culture that I never would have experienced otherwise. Her family obviously comes from a long and proud military tradition. My family comes from a not so long and proud. But my father served, my grandfather served, and it was great to see military culture reflected through her eyes and see that pride.
And he changed you in some way?
Yeah, he definitely changed me. I think the biggest thing I took away from our experience was just, I don't think I realized how I was stereotyping Democrats and liberals when I first met them. And Michael sort of showed me how I was behaving when people were, you know, proud Obama supporters wouldn't say so in the first 10 minutes. And he was like, you completely shut down and you kind of turn into a snot a little bit. Like, you're not the nicest when people start
turning
doing that.
Turn into such
like,
a bean.
Totally.
And what was the stereotype? If they're an Obama supporter, they must be...
Just that we would have nothing in common and that, you know, it's still sort of a difficult thing for me, and I was sort of stereotyping Michael before we met him that I was somehow more patriotic or loved America in a way he could never understand. And then I realized I was doing that actually a lot to people, and I consider myself an open-minded person, but I do think that I'm trying very hard to stop doing that now.
You do have this line in the book about Mormons.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the X-Men movies, you know they're about a group of mutants who are the next wave of evolution. They've got special powers, and left unchecked, they will eventually wipe out humanity as we know it. That's how I feel about Mormons.
I know that line got a lot of attention.
I wrote that.
You wrote that.
And it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek. I mean, the thing about when you go to Salt Lake City, as we did, the Mormons that we saw tend to be really attractive, really sort of like...
beautiful people.
Beautiful people.
Yeah, beautiful people.
They seem so happy and wholesome.
And
you look and you go, oh my God, you're a slightly better human being than I am. And it reminded me of the X-Men.
And even from a religious standpoint, it's kind of like the next level. Like, you guys have Jesus, you know, well, ours is the next level.
Right.
Like, you know, we have the next Messiah. You know, and we don't want to, we've sort of been... We had a very backlash from Mormons, and we say how much we enjoyed them and how friendly they are and how nice it was. Michael and I just, it's not our faith.
And they can posthumously convert all the zombies.
Yes, exactly.
Did you meet a lot of evangelicals on your road trip who can't vote for Obama because he's black and can't vote for Romney because he's Mormon?
No.
Mm-mm.
No, none. Mm-mm. I mean, we didn't really... Talk to any like extreme evangelicals.
We tried. We tried on several occasions, and we really, really tried to go to a Tea Party event or a Tea Party meeting. And not only were we not allowed to come, they said she's not welcome, which cracked
you
me
in
up.
Particular?
Uh-huh. And so they said it to our tour manager. So they sent an email and they're like, I don't think this is the type of thing they would want. And then I think they probably. I mean, I understand. Whatever. We can go there. It's just incredibly hard to find. It's not like they blast on the internet. We're going to have a Tea Party rally.
Well, the
whatever.
Interesting thing about Megan is that as a Republican, she gets far more grief from the right than she does from the left because she takes sometimes more moderate or liberal positions, particularly on social issues. But that's what I mean when I say, like, we are not our political party. We are far more nuanced than that. And Megan is a perfect example of it.
Megan McCain and Michael Ian Black, together they have written America, You Sexy B-Word, A Love Letter to Freedom. Thank you both for making this one of your stops.
Thanks, Brian.
And to follow up on this, folks, we are going to open the phones for our next segment. We've already done two segments about understanding and respecting the other side's politics in a polarized world. And so we want your calls on something that you have come to get about the other side's politics that you didn't always get, whichever the other side is for you. Will you call us with a story like that about yourself? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, something that you are willing to acknowledge that you get, even though you disagree with it, about the other side's politics. Give us a call.